Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Standing with Hollywood writers on strike, what the AFL-CIO is doing. Big organizing win for the UAW in Kansas City, Missouri. Today on the show, we check in with the San Mateo, California building trades, and we'll check in with our labor lawyer, Joyce Goldstein. Welcome to the Friday, May 12th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. Our first guest, we're going to go out to the West Coast and join Bart Pantoja. Bart is the business manager and also serves as secretary treasurer of the San Mateo County Building and Construction Trades Council. They're just a bit outside San Francisco. A little background on Bart. He's a third-generation union member. Began his career in union construction back in 1996 with the International Association of Painters and Allied Trades. He served in a variety of different roles in the glazing industry, including crew lead, foreman, eventually company superintendent. Worked on several projects in the Bay Area and in Sacramento. Also on projects for Bay Area companies located in Seattle and Northern Nevada. Out of appreciation for the opportunities being a union construction worker, which provided for he and his family, Bart has dedicated much of his time in service to his union. That would be a Glazers Local 718. The commitment led him to being elected an executive board officer, and then in 2017, business agent. And nearly 5 years to the day after becoming a business agent for the Glazers, the delegates of the San Mateo Building Trades Council elected him as their business manager and secretary treasurer. And let's see, this past February marked 1 year in that position. So things seem to be going pretty well for him. One of the problems we're going to talk about is the cost of living in California, and that's affecting everybody there. We'll talk how some are bridging the gap. We'll talk about marketing and promoting for unions and child care. Big issue across the trades. Man or woman, single or couple, need affordable and accessible child care. And one of the biggest obstacles, huge obstacle for recruiting women is child care. What are they going to do? Especially single moms. Big issue. I know national, the North American Building Trades is trying to address this issue. They are making some progress, but it's at a very slow pace. So we'll talk about all that and more with Bart Pantoja. Second guest is Joyce Goldstein of Joyce Goldstein and Associates, 4 decades doing labor law. And this is kind of interesting, too, because she is part of the AFL-CIO's Union Lawyer Alliance. Interesting group here. 2,100 union-side lawyers in more than 500 firms and union legal departments around the country. So she's part of that organization. And you may recall we did a segment with Joyce. My gosh, this was in March when we were saluting Women's History. And she is the first woman in the country to start a union-side law firm, dealing with various locals, primarily unions. She's a dynamo, no question about that. And she's going to talk about a ruling that came out last week from the National Labor Relations Board, making it tougher for employers to fire workers who lose their cool during workplace actions. The board's 3-member Democratic majority ditched precedent. This goes back to 2020. Involving a case from General Motors. And the ruling restores a trio of tests that give workers a degree of leeway for blow-ups, whether it's on the picket line, confrontation with a manager, social media, doesn't matter. You have certain rights, and if you lose your cool, you shouldn't be dismissed because you lost your cool. Interesting ruling there, and Joyce will address that as our second guest on the show. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. While studio and streaming company profits have remained very, very high, and spending on content has grown, Hollywood writers, well, they're not keeping up. They're falling behind. The AFL-CIO has embarked on a petition. I urge you to go to AFL-CIO.org and stand with the 11,500 members who write and produce the TV shows and films that entertain pretty much the entire world. You can add your name if you support the striking workers and think that they should get a fair deal. The companies have used the transition to streaming to actually cut writer pay and separate writing from production, worsening working conditions for writers at all levels. So again, just go to the national website, aflcio.org. Hundreds of workers at the Yanfeng USA Riverside facility, this would be outside Kansas City, Missouri, have voted to join UAW Local 710. Nice vote here. 310 to 26. This, by the way, is the sixth UAW-organized Yanfeng facility, joining over 1,000 members of the supplier in Highland Park, Romulus, and Monroe, Michigan, Mississauga, Ontario, and McCalla, Alabama. The Riverside location produces parts for the General Motors Fairfax Assembly Plant in Kansas City, represented by UAW Local 31. Now, the workers organize to put an end to low pay, lack of seniority rights, understaffed shifts, and little to no work-life balance. Workers of color, mind you, have faced discrimination from management in job placement and also rights at work. Sharon Gilliam is one of the workers at Yanfeng. She said this struggle was about fair treatment for every worker in holding management accountable. We want every worker to be educated and informed of their rights and empower them on the shop floor, and this is the first step. President of 710, Jeff Schwedley, said this is a big win for the newest members of the local. They suffered for years being beat down by management for one reason or another because of the different dialects they speak to what they look like. It's time for them to have a voice at the table and a voice in the workplace. It's great for them to finally have the opportunity to negotiate a contract. Another comment here. This is from Brandon Campbell. Brandon is the director of Region 4, the UAW. Brandon said, workers, union, non-union alike are fed up with the corporate profits and executive compensation going up while their purchasing power and quality of life actually goes down. Newest members of the UAW at Yanfeng have taken a huge step toward justice for themselves, their families, and their community. Region 4 and the entire UAW stand in solidarity with you to achieve your first union contract. So welcome to the UAW. Well, shout out there to Local 710, Kansas City, Missouri, United Auto Workers. Also, proud sponsor nationally of America's workforce. YouTube Music contract workers have voted to join the Alphabet Workers Union, which is affiliated with the Communication Workers of America. And that happened with 41 out of 49 eligible workers voting in favor and zero against. How about that? The workers employed by subcontractor Cognizant are responsible for ensuring music content is available. Union said some workers earn $19 per hour with minimal benefits and that workers face union busting efforts. The NLRB ruled in March that Alphabet is a legal employer of the contract workers and must bargain with them following a successful election. And that has happened. The San Jose City Council has voted unanimously to strengthen the city's wage theft policy for public contracts. Now, city law disqualified contractors from public projects if they had two or more wage theft violations in the past 5 years or one unpaid wage theft judgment, but they excluded public works contracts. How about that? Well, the updated public policy includes public works contracts and allows contractors with a history of wage theft to be exempt from disqualifications if they establish a process for worker complaints or allow for collective bargaining agreements. So once again, hats off to the San Jose City Council for moving in the right direction on that wage theft situation. Big issue in America. One more here before we break. Tomorrow is Stamp Out Hunger Day. I mentioned this a couple times on the show throughout the week. The National Association of Letter Carriers Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive, the country's largest one-day food drive, is Saturday, May 13th. That would be tomorrow. So here's what you do. Simply leave a sturdy bag containing non-perishable food items, canned soup, canned vegetables, canned meats, fish, pasta, you name it, cereal. Do this next to your mailbox before regular mail delivery tomorrow. And your union, let me repeat, union letter carrier will deliver it to a local food bank. Yes, the country's largest one-day food drive is tomorrow. Quick break. When we come back, we're going to go to the San Mateo County Building Trades. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at USW.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at uaw.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at LIUNA.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. All right, let's go to the state of California right now, more specifically Foster City, which is in San Mateo County, outside of San Francisco. And joining us on our live line is Bart Pantoja, who is the business manager and secretary treasurer of the San Mateo Building and Construction Trades Council. He's a third-generation union member. And this is part of a series here, what we do on America's Workforce, is kind of go around the country and see how various trades are doing, various labor councils are doing. We're hearing construction is pretty good in so many parts, and we're checking in with California right now, the Sunshine State. Hey, Bart, welcome to America's Workforce. How are we doing today, brother?
Not bad. I appreciate the opportunity and really enjoyed the introduction.
So talk to me a little bit about your background. It sounds like you're painters and allied trades. Is that right?
Yeah, I am. And it's funny because I actually listened into a podcast back a day or two, and my international president was on, Jimmy Williams.
Great guy. Yeah. And you know what? We had his dad on for a number of years, so that family is 100, maybe 200% union. Great guy, great leadership. I know he did a great job in organizing, and that led him to the presidency. So talk to me a little bit of how you got involved in the trades. I mentioned third generation union member. Did your dad have something to do with this? Said, hey, Bart, you know, I did it. You're next. Is that how it went?
Well, it was. I talked to a lot of we through our trades council. We work with our AR, our apprenticeship readiness programs, and I tell the story a lot. But ultimately, yes, my father was actually a glazer, which is what I got the trade I got into, just like Jimmy Williams Jr. actually were glazers. But I also had his brother, my uncle, and a cousin who were union glazers, and actually my grandfather, who was actually a farm worker who came from Mexico on a work permit, before he was 20, and after a number of years of working for one of the landowners that grew a lot of fruit all up and down California, they were going to develop the land, and he connected my grandfather with a glass shop that was Union Glass Shop, and that's how our family got into the trade. So, it wasn't my first choice, actually. It just was. I knew it was there, and I knew watched my family make decent livings, doing it. So, yeah, it's kind of was an easy. Well, basically, I had a kid on the way, so I needed to get some health care is really what happened.
The family will do that, no doubt about that. So as far as glazing, why don't you explain to our audience, because we get new people listening every day, and they're probably wondering, well, I want to get into the trades. I don't know exactly what I want to do. Maybe if I knew a little bit more about what they do, maybe I would get into it. Why don't you explain? And maybe you can get into the apprenticeship program here a little bit. Go ahead.
Yeah. Glazer. Most people don't know what that is. They usually think donuts, glazing on a tile or something.
But right.
Our technical title is architectural glass and metal workers. So really, and the reason we're affiliated with the International Painters is that way back when houses were basically, being built with wood and stucco, the painters would paint the interior, exterior of the house, and they would finish the floors, right? Because you had these hardwood floors that were, lacquered over. But they also would do the glass and the water ceiling, basically, for the glass on a window, which is called glazing. It's a glazing putty or glazing putty. So that's where the term glazer comes from. And over years, decades, and the aluminum and dual pane glass and silicone sealants changed the industry into where the glazing is a specialized trade that, we do, everything from still doing that, fixing a broken window all the way up into, all these glass towers in San Francisco and San Mateo County.
So was there a lot of work when you completed the apprenticeship program? Did you plow right into it? Was there a lot of work for you? And I'm sure you learned a lot, too.
Oh, in California, we benefited from just, again, California's, where we're rated like number five now as far as world economy. Mm-hmm. I got in during the dot-com, right before the dot-com boom, which tech took off, and every space was being turned into office space or upgraded into office space. There was a pouring of money into this. And then the dot-com bust, I still worked through that, actually doing service work and again going back to fixing windows and installing shower doors and mirrors, back up to, up and down, our economy, the glazers, we've stayed pretty busy. There's not a whole lot of us, cause it's just, we would be considered a specialty craft, versus the, like your basic crafts, like your operator and carpenter and, laborer. We're the specialty, and then you have your mechanical, which, your plumber, electrician, sheet metal, which HVAC, things like that. And as far as apprenticeship, to your point, nobody knows what a glazer is. A lot of people don't know what an HVAC person is or a sheet metal worker, what they do. It's kind of in the name, but they do a lot more than that. Mm-hmm. And that's why for us, we're from the national building trades down, we're really trying to get our apprenticeship readiness programs going with exposure to people with, what it really is and how you can make a good living doing it.
Now, when you go through the apprenticeship program, it's very broad. You mentioned glazing, but there's drywall finishing. Obviously, there's painting. You're even in the convention business. I mean, there's so many parts of being in the painters and allied trades. Do you learn all those different things, or do you zero on one after so many years in the program?
Oh, yeah. You start off as one of those trades. So if it's drywall finishing, for example, that's all you do because, you know, you want to be the best at what you do. And the more repetition you have, the better you're going to be at it. And for the employer as well, you know, they're going to have that guy, the person that does that finish with the sanding and even like plaster, not plaster, but the drywall finishing to make it look like marble and all kinds of cool stuff. Yeah, me, I wouldn't be able to do any of that. You know, I know how to cut glass and, you know, metal and know about water and air infiltration on the envelope of the building. That would be my knowledge and skill level that doesn't translate to really painting.
Mm-hmm. Glazers Local 718, we should give a shout out here. How many members in that local right now?
So Glazers Local 718, we've got 700 total members, about 500 working members, the other 200 being retirees. But we're part of a district council in Northern California. Because if anybody looked at a map, if you look at the Bay Area with San Francisco, San Mateo County, just south of that, you go north. But you go east, you have Oakland and a really big chunk of land where there's a lot of industry. You know, we have three different locals that cover all this area. And at total, Glazers were just under 2,000 Glazers working in the Bay Area, give or take on any day.
And how many members in the Building and Construction Trades Council of San Mateo County?
So we have approximately 10,000. You know, we have some of our unions have free flow of manpower like mine where we can cross over different counties. So it's pretty tough to track. But looking at all of us together, we're well over 10,000 members working in and around San Mateo County.
So you got a lot of brothers and sisters there you got to watch over as business manager, secretary, treasurer. I'm sure that keeps you pretty busy. Do you like the position that you got yourself into? I mean, thinking back to what was it, 1996, you started out as an apprenticeship, in glazing, and today you're overseeing 10,000 members in the San Mateo County. That's pretty awesome for you.
You know, it is, but believe me, I don't do it by myself. You know, as a building trades council, you know, I represent, you know, the collective goals of my fellow tradesmen in all the different trades, you know, our executive officers. But yeah, I am that one point of contact when it comes to, you know, city officials and politicians and developers. And I'm trying to, you know, the number one thing we try to do is get project labor agreements on big projects. They're going to bring in a lot of hours to all those members, you know, not just the ones that come from my trade, but, you know, all my brothers and sisters.
All good. You know, Bart, I got to take a quick break here. We're joined with Bart Pantoja, who is a business manager, secretary, treasurer of the Building and Construction Trades Council of San Mateo County. Lots more to talk about next. I want to zero in on child care for the workforce. That's a big issue in the trades. We'll talk about that and more right after this.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
You'd like to upgrade your fund's vision care, but you need to roll back the clock on the cost. Roll it back to the 70s. iMed offers members 76% average savings versus retail on eye exams, glasses, and contacts. Enjoy similar benefits to an indemnity plan, but with consistent savings and a better experience. Endorsed by the National Labor Alliance, iMed takes a consultative approach to tailor your vision insurance benefits. Learn more at iMed.com/union. Figures based on client data. Visit iMed.com/union for more details.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this upcoming segment is brought to you by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Check them out online at oft-aft.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up and receive our show on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so keep them coming, okay? Let's go back to the state of California, San Mateo County, which is just southwest of San Francisco. We're talking to Bart Pantoja, who is the business manager, secretary treasurer of the Building and Construction Trades Council of San Mateo County, about 10,000 strong. Bart, how is the you kind of touched on this in the first segment about the workload, and let's start there. And it's important that the work that's being done is union, is going union. How are we doing right now with both of those elements, Bart?
You know, to your point, like California being a great place to be for labor, and I wanted to just touch that real quick. I actually did get an opportunity when I was coming through the ranks of leadership with the IUPAT. They sent me out to organize in Tennessee, in Atlanta, Georgia, and I got firsthand experience of the difference and how lucky we are here in California.
Oh, yeah.
You know what we got here is the peninsula. We like refer to San Mateo County as a peninsula because you've got San Francisco is a peninsula, but in some ways it's also kind of like an island. But we're right between San Francisco and Santa Clara, which is quote unquote Silicon Valley. And we're doing pretty good considering, we coming out of the pandemic, we didn't lose a lot of work, but it's been a slow burn through that, which has been really good. The benches have been, not full. They're not empty, but they're definitely, not suffering like some other counties in our area. But, what's great about San Mateo County is that, life science is a big deal. I mean, we got the, our vaccines, all kinds of things coming through life science, all kinds of medical study. But since we are close to Silicon Valley and kind of are Silicon Valley, we also have our big organizations like Meta and Facebook and Google that are developing buildings. As a matter of fact, we have a project labor agreement on a three-phase development for Google. Facebook just got approved for a massive residential and commercial and mark and retail project in Menlo Park, and really an underserved community area, hoping to kind of grow and invest back in the community. And they've been, what's great about some of these partners is they build union just because they know that they get what they pay for and they get a great quality product. In San Mateo, it's the same thing with the life science. We don't have any project labor agreements with our life science partners, but we have is a great relationship where they build 100% union, and really any issues we have, it's really handled with a phone call, and we find a resolution. So that's been fantastic for San Mateo County.
Yeah, to your point too, we talk to people all around the country. We recently talked to the political director of the Iowa Federation of Labor, and they're fighting legislation where they want to lower the age for kids to work, and we're seeing that in a number of states. I know that's not happening in California. So it's so important that people exercise their right to vote and get the right people in office. And you've done a great job on that over the years. The only problem I have with California is your cost of living. Do you get a lot of complaints about that from some of your members?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I complain about it. it's ridiculous, it's mind-boggling, the disparity, And to that point, that's why we fight so hard for these union jobs, because even at that, you still almost need two incomes in a household to make it in the Bay Area. And, even that's an example for myself, me and my fiance, she's a union nurse. I'm making basically what in my industry, a union foreman would make, and we had to put everything we have together to get a place. Right. And because of that, kind of, I know this is going to be kind of something down the line, but I wanted to touch this is that, we're talking about retaining women, and I started down this idea of, childcare, and many discussions, that's the tough part, because women are the default childcare provider, right? They're the default person for the elderly in their family as well. So it's tough to get women and retain them. But in that conversation, I realized that everybody, because households are two-income households in California, the Bay Area, they need child care anyway. Even if you are married or have or partnered with somebody, you're still both working and need a place to take your kid so that you can keep a roof over your head and food on the table. So, yeah, that's definitely a mission here.
Yeah. Well, I know some of the trades have really done remarkable work making sure that that the women are taken care of with regard to child care. I know the iron workers, for one. In fact, they even came up with the maternity leave. I believe they were the first union to do that for 12 weeks. And because they have seen, I mean, think about this. A female goes through the apprenticeship program for 4 or 5 years. They really like the pay. And then all of a sudden, they have a kid to deal with. What are they going to do? They're going to quit that job, and then you have to start all over as business manager, secretary, treasurer, to recruit somebody else. Let's just stop right there. What's happening with various trades in San Mateo County? I mentioned the iron workers. Any of the trades there that are kind of moving in the right direction when it comes to this issue?
Yeah, you know, the apprenticeship programs. You know, one thing that talking about California being a great state is that there's been state grant money. It's called the ERICA, and I couldn't tell you what the acronym stands for right now, but I think it's like equality. That's what E is. But ultimately, it's money to help those first few years for any apprentice in that apprenticeship for childcare. So apprenticeships can help with like a voucher or a subsidy, help pay for some childcare. Because, you know, when you start up as an apprentice, you usually start at like 50% of what a journeyman makes. And so, you know, you're already starting at a lower level, and then you got to pay the really exorbitant cost for childcare. It's insane. So that you can get that career going until you get to that journey level and making, you know, enough money where it isn't such a burden. So, you know, our ARPs, our apprenticeship readiness programs, can also use that money to help when they're in that training to help provide childcare at that time. You know, and again, to your point, you know, the state, us having the right political people in place has helped us in this fight. The other thing is SFO, so San Francisco Airport. So the San Francisco Airport actually resides in San Mateo County. And the San Francisco Airport at one time had like 12-hour, almost 24-hour childcare because of the pilots and all the people working at the airport. It's open basically 24/7. And prior to the pandemic, that started to taper off. But for a while, they had childcare available for those times, and parents would actually kind of transition at the airport. One might work a day shift, one might work a night shift, and the kid would be there for just a few hours in that in between, and it was really beneficial. So that's one thing I've been talking with SFO and all our stakeholders on, trying to bring that back and then applying it to construction, because SFO actually, from curb to cockpit, is represented. You know, almost every worker there is represented by a union. And we also have a project labor agreement there since the late 90s. And it's every fellow tradesman that I work with today we've all worked at the airport at one time or another. And with this infrastructure money coming in, it's just a great place to start to create that. Because that's the real pushback, too, is, you know, what child care place is going to be open at 5 a.m. for you to drop your kid off? And then so you're a concrete finisher, you know, and you're a woman or a man, then needs childcare. You can't leave until you're done finishing the concrete. If the concrete truck's late, you know, you might be working extra hours. And having a place with the flexibility to watch your kid after school or prior to school, you know, is something that we're trying to get, because it kind of really doesn't exist.
Boy, that's incredible. 24-hour childcare. Yeah, you said they kind of there was a blip during the pandemic. Are they back to 24 hours over there at the San Francisco Airport?
Not yet. And I think the San Francisco Airport's suffering with workforce needs as well. They need like 180 people just for a lot of different jobs there. So that was a discussion that, you know, I'm keeping the discussion going. We're actually in the middle of renewing our PLA because it had a 10-year term. And this is the third renewal, and something that we're discussing.
Another question here, age. And we're seeing in various parts of the country where a lot of the trades members, men and women, are in their maybe mid-50s. They're thinking about retirement. How are we faring in San Mateo County with that?
Because you're referring to the silver tsunami that we're faced with. Well, you know, in this seat where I'm at, I'm trying to feed the pipeline to bring in that generation behind mine that is actually more populated than the baby boomer or equal to the baby boomer population. And then I'm the one in the middle, the Gen X, Gen Z, whatever. I don't know what it is, but you know, this is where our trade introduction, for in San Mateo County, we call it the trade introduction program. It's our ARP. You know, that's where we're going after the students. We're going after the 20 somethings. You know, the reality is the statistics for apprenticeship, people joining and starting an apprenticeship. You know, when I joined, I was 19 years old, and that was kind of the average, between 18 and 22. Today, sure, the average is between around 26 and 28, and that person who's getting into the trade may have a bachelor's degree, may have be on their second or third career attempt. So we're still trying to get those people, too, because they're going to need to put a good 20, 30 years in so they can have a decent retirement.
They probably went to Stanford and are trying to, you know, knock down that $300,000 student debt that they're dealing with right now, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's unfortunate. The college golden ticket isn't really the golden ticket anymore. That college degree doesn't guarantee you the job like it used to. You know, and the thing is, we need people in regular jobs, though. We're like I said, the airports, you can make a good living in the concessions. You know, as a matter of fact, I was trying to get my daughter to have people that push the wheelchair from the plane to the curb, right? In San Mateo County, our minimum wage is one of the highest in the state. So you're going to get minimum wage plus some benefits just to wait with a wheelchair.
Isn't that something? Wow. Yeah, there's a lot of change ahead. There's no doubt about that. I'm just wondering, though, the fact that you are in Silicon Valley, it's tech, 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 tech. And you know the kids today, they want to be behind their computers. They want to get out of school and make $200,000-$400,000 a year right away. That's got to be very difficult for you when it comes to recruiting, especially in the schools. And Bart, you know this. The schools want those kids to go to college because they get graded on that. How are you doing with? I mean, how are you beating that kind of thing?
Hey, you know, we're trying to change the narrative through our ARP program. We've scheduled meetings with guidance counselors, with our school districts, trying to get them all in one spot and explain to them, because they don't know. The guidance counselor doesn't know how beneficial it is to have a job in the union trade, and do they make good money and have all these benefits, you know? And when they realize, they go, wow, well, we didn't know that. Oh, yeah, exactly. That's why. And the thing, too, is they keep trying to push the kids that, you know, maybe aren't the, you know, have the highest grades in school to choose. Oh, you know, you don't want to go to college or you're not going to make it, you know, quote unquote. Like, well, maybe you consider, you know, the trades. But the trades aren't just for people who, quote unquote, aren't going to make it in college. They're for people who may just like to work with their hands and who aren't very sharp. You know, one of the business managers here in San Mateo County for the plumbers, I mean, he went to college for for construction management, you know, and he ended up getting a job as a plumber, and you know, now he's running his local. So, you know, there's a lot of opportunity there. It's just exposing people to what the reality is when it comes to getting construction. Again, like you said, I was at 19. I got in. I just wanted to like get through 40 hours a week, have health care for my kid, you know, and I got to buy some nice things every now and again, you know, because as I started earning and making my way to journeyman status, you know, I had a car, my wife had a car, all that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
it just, people didn't see that. You know, what's a real bummer is I actually ran into a guy I went to high school with, and I was a journeyman. He had just got out of college. You know, I was already, you know, was basically, I just purchased a home and all that stuff. And, you know, he was working at Starbucks, and Starbucks is a good job. It's not a bad job. But after 4 years of college, like to your point, you think you'd be bringing in more income for that time and effort.
Well, at least they're organizing at Starbucks, but you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right on that. Definitely a good future in the trades, especially in San Mateo County. All right, my brother, you take care. You got a lot on your plate, and let's stay in touch on these issues, because there is a pretty bright future ahead when you think about the change that's going on in America right now, the electrification, you know, with the batteries and EV production and oil drill. I mean, there's so many things, especially now with climate change and solar. I mean, these are all issues that we're on top of here on America's Workforce. So keep in touch and stay safe and stay strong. Okay, brother?
Thank you. And thank you for the opportunity. And thank you for what you do.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to link up with our labor lawyer. That would be Joyce Goldstein. And we have an interesting case to talk about from the National Labor Relations Board involving your rights at work. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's L-I-U-N-A.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next portion of America's Workforce, sponsored by the good folks at iMed. Switching to Managed Vision Care may save your fun money. You want to do that, right? It'll also deliver a better experience. So go to imed.com/union and you will learn a whole lot more. Before we get to a Joyce Goldstein, just want to do a shout out to all public sector workers, especially those that are unionized. This is Public Service Recognition Week, and I got a message here from our presenting sponsor, which would be the Laborers International Union of North America, now under General President Brent Booker. Terry O'Sullivan retired from LIUNA at the end of April. And Brent said, LIUNA is proud to represent more than 50,000 public sector workers who demonstrate courage and fortitude in serving our country day in and day out. Our nation owes you gratitude for your service and your sacrifice. LIUNA will continue to advocate with public workers to improve worksite health and safety, protect union rights, and raise wages for all that they do to keep us safe and make all of our lives better. Brent Booker, General President of our presenting sponsor, Laborers International Union of North America. Public sector workers, there are many. We're talking teachers, police, firefighters, government workers, state, federal government workers. They're all around us, and they're keeping us safe each and every day. All right, let's go to our live line, and welcome back to the show, Joyce Goldstein, our labor lawyer, 4 decades of labor law experience dealing with unions, and also a member of the Union Laborers Alliance, which is an organization over 2,100 union side lawyers around the country. She works hard, and today she is going to talk about a real interesting ruling involving General Motors. Joyce Goldstein, welcome to welcome back to the show. Talk to me about this case. I guess it came down last week, and you were at a meeting. This is kind of funny. You were at a meeting with the general counsel of the National Labor Relations Board when the announcement came down. Is that right?
Yes, I was. It was a meeting of the Union Lawyers Alliance, as you mentioned, which is international organization of union-side labor lawyers through the AFL-CIO. And we have an annual conference, and Jennifer Abruzzo, the general counsel of the NLRB, was speaking at the conference right at the time that the NLRB issued its decision in this particular case, Lion Elastomers. So it was a kind of exciting time to be with her. And it was also a real demonstration of the separation between the general counsel of the NLRB and the board itself, because there she was as the general counsel acting in her role like as a prosecutor. So she had no idea what the decision was going to be in that case, just like the rest of us had no idea what the decision was going to be in that case until it actually issued. And that came out on May Day, which was an appropriate day for an important case.
So talk to me about this decision, because it actually reversed something that happened, what was it, 3 years ago in 2020 when Trump was in charge of the White House. Can you give us some details on what the case was and what it is now?
Right. I will do that happily. Yes, the case involved worker speech and that it needs to be viewed in the context in which the speech occurred. And there had been a decision 3 years ago by the Trump board, and that was in the General Motors case. And that decision had overturned previous precedents, some of which had been in place for many, many decades. And what this case did was it reversed the Trump board decision in General Motors and brought back some of the earlier precedents. And the question in the case was, what analysis should apply if the worker is disciplined or discharged because of their speech? And specifically in this case, what had happened was an employee was fired for making certain comments, raising concerns about working conditions at a safety meeting with a safety manager. And based on that activity, General Motors fired this employee. And the issue was, again, as I say, what tests should apply? How should the NLRB look at protected speech? And of course, you know, raising concerns about employee safety at a safety meeting is important protected speech. But sometimes, of course, people get heated and they have outbursts and they say what might in other situations be viewed as inappropriate or outrageous comments. Mm-hmm. But what the NLRB has said is that you have to look at the context in which those comments are made. And really the issue here was that for many years, the board had looked at that. They looked at the context for the protected activity. So if comments were made on a picket line, they would say, well, you know, were the non-strikers intimidated or coerced by that, the comments and the behavior? Or if there were confrontations with managers like this, you know, did the employer provoke the employee behavior? If the comments were made on social media, the NLRB had said, well, you know, were the posts profane or threatening? You have to look at the totality of the circumstances. But what the Trump board did when it came along in the General Motors case is it said all of those, what they called context-specific tests, were all rejected. The Trump board said, we're just going to apply the same kind of analysis that we would in any other discipline case, and where there might be mixed motives, where an employer might be motivated in part by legitimate reasons and in part by wanting to discipline somebody for engaging in protected activity. And so the Trump board's decision really focused on employer motive, which made it a lot easier for employers to sanction, discipline, discharge employees when they were engaging in protected activity. And what the NLRB did in this case was to shift the focus so it makes it a little more difficult for employers to sanction employees for engaging in protected activity by having a higher standard and saying, look, you know, some speech when it occurs in these certain situations really needs to be afforded greater protection, even if an employer doesn't doesn't like it, even if the speech is otherwise outrageous. Mm-hmm. So this was a big deal case. This was a very, very significant case that the Biden board decided, reversing the Trump board decision.
Yeah, it definitely shifts it over to the workers. So you can lose your cool, but there are limitations to losing your cool then? Is that what I'm reading into here?
Yes. I mean, there are limitations, and there have always been limitations. The question is, where do you draw the line? And
right.
The U.S. Supreme Court long ago, and a case called Lynn versus Point Guard Workers, talked about that. And, you know, and you also recall, you know, the Jack London definition of a scab. And, you know, that if you're on a picket line and you call somebody a scab, or, you know, I mean, that those are fighting words. And there's a lot of ugly speech that happens in the context of a labor dispute. It's important to protect those rights. And even when they make people uncomfortable, and they do. They obviously do.
Okay, let me ask you this. This person that was fired from General Motors for blowing off some steam, does that person, because of the labor board's ruling last week, does that person have a right to get his or her job back now?
Yes, that person, just to clarify, was not employed by General Motors, because this overturned the previous precedent from the General Motors case.
Oh, okay.
So this was a new case called Lion Elastomers. So it's a different employer that was involved. But yes, the NLRB held in this decision that employee who had been discharged in 2018 because of what he had done at the safety meeting, that he had a right to be now reinstated with full back pay and other appropriate remedies.
Gotcha. In your experience, and you have a lot of experience, Joyce, does this come up a lot? Do we have employers that complain about what's said, say, for instance, on a picket line or to a manager? What have you been hearing?
I think that it's really common, you know, maybe less so on picket lines because, you know, not everybody's going out on strike all the time. And, you know, even though, of course, there's been increased strike activity recently, you know, strikes are still relatively uncommon. But I think that it comes up in social media all the time. I mean, probably that's the most common place where I think we see this, is that, you know, unions, employees run social media campaigns. They say things that are, you know, critical of their employers. And it's a tough balance because employers, you know, do often have legitimate concerns about their reputation in the community and that sort of thing. But on the other hand, the NLRB has said, well, you know, employee speech, even if it's critical, even if it's intemperate, deserves protection. And
yeah.
If the social media posts are not profane or threatening, then they're gonna, you know, what the board has said is they'll look at the totality of the circumstances to see whether there's a violation. And I think that of all of the different context specific situations that the board is looking at and what happens in the world, I think that the social media experience is probably at this point the most common, because it's just you know, happening all the day, all the time.
Without a doubt, we are consumed by social media today. So that's definitely one that's probably going to come up down the road. All right, Joyce, always appreciate your analysis of what happens with the National Labor Relations Board. JoyceGoldsteinLaw.com is the website. JoyceGoldsteinLaw.com. Over four decades of experience, and the first woman with a union-sided law firm and member of the Union Lawyers Alliance, part of the AFL-CIO. So you take care. I know you're busy. We'll talk to you next month, okay?
Thank you. You take care, too.
And that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, we're going to talk to a former striker from Rutgers about their new contract, which I understand is a pretty good one. Plus, we're going to check in with the steelworkers and their health care council. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.